everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality lying underneath.
Yes, that's exactly what we're doing here.
Indeed.
And today we're going to talk about The Uncommon Reader by Alan Bennett. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes, Alan Bennett. Right.
A tiny little novella.
Mm-hmm. And a fun one, too.
Yeah, just it's funny how a little tiny book about the Queen of England beginning to read books can be so absorbing to me.
Yeah.
And it's a quick read, but it's just, I think it's because it's all about books and her reactions to them.
Yeah. And that's why I loved it. Yeah. Well, great. And I'm glad you did. This is episode number 42, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
For those who are counting.
Yes. And we are, by the way.
We are counting.
Oh, well.
So in this one, obviously, you know, the running joke is that this one's the answer.
Yeah.
So
to everything.
That's right. When I hit age 42, I thought that something would happen, but it never did.
Didn't grow a second head.
No, none of that stuff. And I certainly didn't have any more answers.
You were afraid. Okay.
It was kind of a disappointment all around. But moving forward.
Well, we do the best we can.
You bet.
Maybe this has the answer to why we like books.
That's it. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, I don't know if you do, but sometimes when you read a lot, you look up from there and you think, am I wasting my time? Because some books make me feel that way.
Oh,
but other ones do not. So, you know,
Night of the Living Trekkies, you kind of go, I realize it's brain candy and those 2 or 3 hours, but it was fun 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's okay, right?
Yeah.
If I'm not reading Bleak House all the time.
And it's definitely okay if we're not reading Bleak House all the time, you know?
Oh, thank goodness.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, this book made me think a lot about, well, why read and why do I think it's valuable? It made me think about that.
Well, me too. I was surprised at how many little markers I had in here. When I sat down to make notes today, I had a whole page. So
I read it on the Kindle. I've got 20 marks.
Oh, well, sir, I salute you.
Yes, so that's plenty. And what is it in print? 100 and probably a little over 100?
117 pages.
117, okay.
Or 119.
119.
Almost. Yeah.
Cool.
And it's a tiny book, too. I mean, and the print's not tiny in it. But, the basic conceit of the book is that the queen's corgis stray into around a part of Buckingham Palace that the queen hasn't been to. And there's a book library, you know, mobile book library there.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes in and then she feels, well, one is the queen. She always refers to herself in third person. One must, you know, do what one's duty. And so she feels like since she's there, she really should check out a book. Mm-hmm. And she kind of cracks me up because she checks out a book based on the fact that she met the author one time, right? So, this person? And they're like, okay, well, here you go. Take this book. Do you read much, ma'am? No? All right, good luck, you know?
Oh, man, yep.
Yeah,
that was funny. Some of her commentary about authors, you know, as she starts to get interested in books. She comments about, you know, I haven't really enjoyed meeting the authors so much. Maybe I should just leave it to the books.
Yeah.
And,
that was fun. The thing I thought was funny about it is that when she takes that one book back, which she had a hard time with it, but she plowed through it because, you know, if you start a book, you should finish it. She's full of these rules.
Yeah.
And then she picks Nancy Mitford. I've never read any of her books, but I know they're lighter, humorous books. And it says, I hope you don't mind if I read just a touch.
No, please do.
It says, she picked it up. Now, didn't her sister marry the Mosley man? Mr. Hutchings said he believed she did. And the mother-in-law of another sister was my mistress of the robes? I don't know about that, ma'am. Then, of course, there was the rather sad sister who had the fling with Hitler, and one sister became a communist. And I think there was another besides, but this is Nancy? Yes, ma'am. Good. Novels seldom came as well connected as this, and the queen felt correspondingly reassured. So it was with some confidence that she gave the book to Mr. Hutchings to be stamped. And I was like, I've met a lot of these people. It would be great.
The Queen of England.
I know.
Yeah, stamp my book, please. I love it.
Also, well, I know. And the funny thing is that when it kind of it shows you two things. This author is very clever, I think. Mm-hmm. He shows you, for one thing, to me, the way we pick books when we're not used to reading before we've got really our footing is fairly tenuous in terms of any good reason to read it. Mm-hmm. And we might get lucky and stumble onto things we like. But, you know, we kind of do that. This cover looks good. You know, if this is on this shelf over here that I found something else good on one time, you know, it's when you
I still do that. I'm a sucker for a really good cover.
Well, it will at least make me read the jacket.
Yeah.
I know. And we should be suckers for covers.
Yes, we should be suckers for covers as I hold my Kindle here before me.
Yes.
You know, that's one thing, you know, I lament here in town. We had a Borders and it closed last year.
Very
sad.
Yeah.
I have really good memories of that store.
I know. Find things wandering around that you wouldn't find when you're just buying.
Yeah, not only that, you know, the wandering stuff, love that, but we had two Harry Potter release parties there.
Oh, yeah.
I brought my kids and, yeah. But anyway, you know, I feel partly responsible because I here have my Kindle.
You murderer.
I know, I'm a murderer of love.
Well, I'm sorry. This is the world. It's kind of adapt or die,
I feel
like.
It sure is, yeah. It sure is. But I do love a good book cover still, you know.
Well, yes, and as somebody who's going to go to work tomorrow and start thinking about designing another book for Emmaus Road, I have to say, you know, it's my book covers aren't clever like these, but, you know, I do my best. We do think about it. But anyway, because then what happens is the Queen just starts reading book after book, and there was one person in the bookmobile along with the guy who runs it, and that's a boy, well, young man who works in the kitchen. And he's way ahead of her in having experienced different books, so she gets him assigned to her, I guess, room or whatever, so that he can just pick out books for her to read. So he's kind of like educating her, which is also rather a shaky way to do it. I mean, it's fine, except, you know, he has very specific interests in books that she may or may not agree with. And then she kind of goes from there the way most of us do. And the books start to take over her life more and more.
Yeah, she starts to read rather than do other things.
Yeah.
Wants to schedule it in.
Meticulously as she used to, because she used to pay attention. Now she's just like, whatever, just give it to me. I'm reading till the last minute, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And then, you know, when she really gets into it a little bit even later, she actually goes somewhere to hunt or something. I could remember exactly.
Something like that. Something like that,
where she was supposed to participate in this hunt, and she was tired of it, and so she read. She just read instead and didn't come out. And
Yeah. And she starts doing things like, this is one of my favorite things, is they would always, she'd go places to meet people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go through this receiving line, and it's just the regular people sometimes. And so the ladies in waiting, or whatever they're called, would prep them with questions or things to say. She's going to ask you this and this and this. Well, the Queen starts going off program and saying, what have you been reading lately? And a lot of the people don't read. And so they're like, do you mean the TV guide or something? You know, she's like, oh, well, let me tell you what I, and then she'll have extra books in her purse. She'll, here, you really like this. And she starts giving people books.
Yeah.
They're bewildered. Yeah. They don't know what to do.
I really loved that section of it. You know, I loved how the people were coaching people how to meet the Queen and what to say and to talk about the weather and things. And so that they'll get the experience, hey, you know, I met the Queen and she talked to me directly to me. And that's, you know, a real personal experience. You know, I really enjoyed that. And then the book thing, you know, where she's handing out books and things, you know, that's hilarious too. And how it horrified everybody. Just, it was funny. I feel like I learned a lot about the monarchy in this book too. So not only was it reading, but the other dimension for me was about the monarchy itself. you know.
Yeah, and at least certain, and it, you feel like it's pretty accurate, although it's obviously this author's view of it, but you kind of feel like they don't really have much to do except be figureheads. I mean, and not that that's not important. I mean, they're an important part of the identity of the country, I think. That's the feeling I get.
Yeah, yeah. And but, that's a feeling I get, too. And, you know, this guy is British, right? I mean, he's writing from an English standpoint. So, you know, I do think that he's subtly making some satirical points about the monarchy. Because the book is really funny. But it is subtly funny.
It's gentle. It's a gentle book.
And it's not mean at all. He's not saying that this queen is useless and she doesn't deserve to be around or anything like that. He was just like, isn't this monarchy we have really, really odd? and you know, and I don't know what's true and what's not. It's like, does she in real life refer to herself as one? I don't know the answer. Does she really?
I know. I mean, that's a good question. She throughout the entire book, she refers to herself in third person, so to speak. One does not do this.
Yeah, one should read that.
Yes,
one might find that interesting. You know.
I know. And, and even when he's being funny, he's just even when he could be mean about something. I just was flipping through, looking at it, and here's the little part where Norman, who's her advisor, is saying. She says, well, what else is there? And he says, well, you could try Kilvert. She says, who's he? And he says, a vicar, ma'am, 19th century, lived on the Welsh borders and wrote a diary, fond of little girls. Oh, said the Queen, like Lewis Carroll. Worse, ma'am. Dear me. Can you get me the diaries? I'll add them to our list, ma'am. You know? Just like so. Yeah, he's making a commentary about Kilvert and the comparison to Lewis Carroll. You're just like, oh, okay, Lewis Carroll, just fond of little, I mean, not in a bad way at all. From everything I've read where people have tried to say that, other people have come on and gone, no, that not for that time. That's not how that was. But this guy, oh, evidently, you know, and she's like, oh, that's terrible. Can I get those books? You know, she's not going to worry about that. She's going to read the book. And that's so right, I think I focused more on the book part of it because.
Well, yeah, I did too. I mean, there were so many meaningful passages about why we read. And I just pulled up a quote that was just kind of another funny thing. No, if reading was to be done, it was better done in a place not set aside for it. The queen thought that there might be a lesson there, and she went back upstairs.
When she tried to read in her library.
Yeah,
that's
that
right.
Cracks me up. Yeah, because she kept on being interrupted. And not only that, but, you know, she's out there getting books from the library, and she's got a huge library of books that are in these cases, you know, where they actually, they're like cabinets, you know, they're not all open.
Yeah.
And I don't have it marked, and I can't remember the exact wording, but there was a reason why she wasn't reading those. And I can't recall what it was, but
no,
it was funny stuff. But some of it was because they were rare, and things like that. But you know, they weren't comfortable books somehow. For her. So
yeah, I know, and she's actually checking them out of the library.
Yeah,
and worrying about getting them back on time. Mm-hmm. I mean, and not it's just be a little comment here and there. I mean, it doesn't turn her into a common person at all, but you know, one has one's obligations, and one of those is to keep the rules.
Right, right.
Yeah, one does things the right way. And you kind of get the feeling, and as you point out, it's a gentle commentary on the monarchy too, but the other feeling you get is from watching the queen blossom as she reads these books is that she's never been allowed to do anything that formed her mind or her person in a way that wasn't directed towards her duty.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's
a section that I think highlights that a great deal. She says, what she was finding also was how one book led to another. Doors kept opening wherever she turned, and the days weren't long enough for the reading she wanted to do. But there was regret, too, and mortification at the many opportunities she had missed. And then as a child, she had met this author and that author, and nothing much she could have said to them. And she had met T.S. Eliot, too, and there was Priestley and Philip Larkin and even Ted Hughes, to whom she had taken a bit of a shine to, but who remained nonplussed in her presence. And it was because she had at the time read so little of what they had written that she could not find anything to say. And they, of course, had not said much of interest to her. What a waste. And so, I mean, that was her just starting to realize. I love the passage about how the doors open. I mean, just in this podcast alone, you know, I don't pick these books out for a whole year. You know, it's like one thing leads to another. And, you know, I'm always being reminded like, oh, I read this thing a long time ago. Oh, how great would that be? Because of conversations that we have. And that's one of the things that interests me a lot about science fiction is that interconnectedness. I don't think it's happening. Well, I should, the statement is more clear. It's not happening today as much as it used to in the past. It still does a little bit, but you know, when someone would come out with a major novel, it wouldn't be uncommon for there to be in another novel by a different person, some kind of a rebuttal to an idea that like Heinlein had in his famous Stranger in a Strange Land or something. And then they may name a character after a character in Stranger in a Strange Land. So those who were kind of in the know would understand that, he is responding to what this guy said. And that's, all those doors that open. That's one of the things I just love about it. The more you read, the more of this stuff that you discover, and it's really satisfying and fun.
Do you think that's not happening now? Or is
I think it's happening less. In science fiction specifically.
No, I know. I'm thinking, do you think people just put those ideas out there? Like there's that, what is his name? Paolo Bagli something.
Oh, yeah.
He writes all those environmentally based stories.
Yeah.
Where you can see... He just thinks that because of the environment and our abuse and all this kind of stuff, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. And are there people, you're right, there's an opportunity for someone to write a story that says, well, hold on a minute.
Yeah, and to do it in a way, it's got to be a good story in itself. Yeah, there's got to be a reason for it to exist.
They turn their craft to it.
Exactly. And then somehow make the connection to that other book. And I just don't think that that's happening right now, because I think people are kind of in niches and things. You know, people who read epic fantasy read epic fantasy.
Yeah.
People who read, you know, hard science fiction, well, kind of what's left of hard science fiction, which is very, very little.
Sad.
And hard science fiction is a lot of where that stuff took place, too.
You need to read some Jack McDevitt.
Yes.
Or I guess you have.
Yes, I have read some. Yep.
Silly
I've
me.
Read two or three.
Sorry.
No, I love it.
I know.
Big
he's
fan.
Good,
big fan.
Yeah.
You know who I haven't read enough of is Michael Flynn.
Agreed.
We read Iflheim, but I have not read the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we now digress. We're like the queen, too.
There we are. The door opened. You're following the path. That's exactly
right,
what happens.
And I'm getting better. And in fact, I actually had an email from someone who either on Happy Catholic or Goodreads, and I can't remember where, came across a mention of Tim Powers, Declare.
Yeah, yeah.
And was saying, oh, I just love this book. It's so wonderful, and I bought copies of it and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, and I never would have read that if not for you.
Yeah, and Declare is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Because Declare has Lovecraftian elements in it.
Oh, man.
And we're going to do some Lovecraft in October.
Well, yeah. And do you think, though, that maybe we're just not seeing some of those connections? Because when you said that...
I guarantee you we're not. Because even in this book specifically, because I am really uneducated about the Queen, you know, and clearly I haven't read about the Queen in other books, you know, there could certainly be something in here that this author mentioned that I missed, because I would never make the connection. But the thing is, in reading, what's cool about it is that it doesn't matter, you know, because the story works great. It doesn't make a difference. But there is this added dimension that you get when you make that connection. I don't know if it just, you know, it just makes you go, wow, oh, that's neat.
Well, what I was thinking of, though, is you were saying that, you know, and I was thinking, you know, there's Lovecraft, of course, but there's Charles Stross. Have you read much of him?
Yeah, some. Not a lot, but some. A lot of short stories.
He has several series, and the only one I really like is the one about the, is it called The Laundry?
I've heard of that.
It's like a, like a secret service, sort of a FBI, CIA sort of a thing. It's British because he's British. And but the thing is what they're having to combat and cover up and everything are these Lovecraftian sort of elements that are everywhere, that's cool. always trying to break into our world. And so when I was thinking about Declare and thinking about you talking about reading H.P. Lovecraft sometime soon, very soon, like next, I was thinking, oh, Charles Stross. Tim Powers in Declare. And I was like, but what he did is he took those elements and he gave them a wealth of meaning in terms of good and evil and hope. And man can win. Whereas what Charles Stross does is take those elements and there's, you barely get out by the skin of your teeth. Each book is written after a different style of story, like a 007 or a, they're fun stories to read and I really like them. But he keeps that Lovecraftian, we're just barely holding things back sort of element. Whereas Tim Powers took it and made it something rich and interesting and hopeful and, you know, it had that, of course, Catholic element in which we talked about at the time. So you kind of almost wonder, is this just the way Tim Powers writes? Or did he kind of go, I see you out there, Charles Stross. Here's my answer to that also.
Yeah, he sure could have been. Yeah, he sure could have been.
I'd like to think that anyway, whether he did or not, I don't know. I guess we'd have to ask. But
yes, we would.
Yeah.
Which would be neat.
Wouldn't it? Oh, Tim Powers.
Tim, give us a call.
Yeah.
I love that.
You can get our emails from the website, Tim. Come on.
You bet.
Oh, that would be a dream, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A wonderful, wonderful dream.
And here we are. We're practically acting out this book right in front of everybody.
I know.
Because, you know, the queen has that, and the queen has this desire to meet these writers. Yeah. And she laments, like I read, she laments having met some in the past that now she's read and missed her opportunity. But then she meets some and has trouble still. I mean, she doesn't seem to connect with them.
Doesn't she have a party for them?
Yeah, she wants to have a party for them. And that was funny, too, because she wanted to have a party for them. But the people, her handlers or whatever you call her people, are like, well, you can't have a writer's conference without having something for the scientists and the artists. So
she's like... Really?
Yeah. So
I know. Well, you're just, you know, being non-inclusive.
Right. Right.
I know. Well, exactly. And I'll tell you something else that's interesting. I don't run into this, but maybe it's because I hang with a special crowd of people in all parts of my life. I don't know. There's seems to be a universal lack of desire to read of anybody in the castle. And of anybody that she comes across, I mean, there's one person who's actively trying to stop her reading, and Sir Kevin Knight or whatever his name is.
Yeah,
Sir
he's Kevin. Actually conspiring against her a little bit.
Yes, getting people to take books and hide them and getting Norman reassigned. You know, this book is so short, it doesn't really have spoilers, but obviously, you know, we're way past that. But gives Norman actually, and he doesn't do it in a bad way, really. He gets him an education. Here, we're sending you to college. And the queen says, where'd you go? I don't know. So she's on her own, and you're just thinking, you care that much? But it's what you see represented here are a lot of people saying things like, and I think this, a lot of this is put in Sir Kevin's mouth, actually, is he misunderstands what books do, because right under the part you were reading about the regret, because I marked that page also, is she was saying what a waste all that was to have met the authors but not have read their stuff. And he says she made the mistake of mentioning this to Sir Kevin. But ma'am, must have been briefed, surely. Of course, said the queen, but briefing is not reading. In fact, it is the antithesis of reading. Briefing is terse, factual, and to the point. Reading is untidy, discursive, and perpetually inviting. Briefing closes down a subject. Reading opens it up. And then he says, I wonder whether I can bring your majesty back to the visit to the shoe factory, says Sir Kevin. Next time, said the queen shortly. Where did I put my book?
Oh, wow. And here's another interesting aspect to me. This is a little bit later, I believe, but you know, I'm just calling up in the Kindle. There was something of that she felt to reading. It was anonymous. It was shared. It was common. And she who had led a life apart now found that she craved it. Here in the pages and between these covers, she could go unrecognized. I thought that was another interesting aspect to it.
I marked that one also. Doesn't she remember a time when she and her sister got out? Yeah, they got out on VE night and mingled unrecognized with the crowds, and it was just thrilling to them because they were anonymous.
Right, right. You know, that reminds me. There are obviously similarities between the papacy and the monarchy. I just read that Pope John Paul II apparently snuck out often. Did you see that story?
No, I did not.
Yeah, shoot, I'm going to have to find it because I just skimmed it. I didn't have much time.
Yeah.
It said something about him sneaking out often.
Oh.
So no one can be told. He snuck out a lot.
Yes. You wonder if the Pope does that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they won't let him have cats.
Uh-huh.
And he loves cats. Every time he goes anywhere that's outside of the Vatican, he has... or one of his people has you know, little treats and stuff, and he's always petting the cats. And
how can they not let the Pope have cats?
Well, I guess somebody said, when I said this, somebody very recently said that they thought they'd let him have a cat in his rooms or something. And I'm just like, you know, I know it's priceless stuff, but he's the Pope. He is spending his whole life in service of everyone.
Right.
Can the poor old man who wanted to retire so many times just to write books and be with his cats and his music, and the Pope John Paul said no, and he went, okay. He's 80 something. He's like in his late 80s. Can he just have a cat?
And here we are talking about books, and that was something that struck me, you know, when I read about Pope Benedict. It's exactly what you just said. How he just said, it was before the Pope John Paul died. He said, well, I'm finished. I've done everything that you asked me to do. I want to go be with my books. And I want to be with, you know. And Pope said, no, you're not finished yet. You're not done yet.
Yeah, I need you.
Right.
I still need you. And we all needed him.
And how different he has been from Pope John Paul II. And because he does seem to be... You know, literary is the word I use for Pope Benedict.
Oh, man. I hate to, he's such an intellectual, but in the best possible way, in the way of taking big, big ideas and making them accessible. I'm reading right now very slowly. I can't remember if I've mentioned this. I'm reading Introduction to Christianity. He wrote it in the late 1960s, maybe. When he was a professor in Tübingen, which I've actually visited.
It was so great.
Cool. Yeah, it's a great little college town in Germany. And the university's really old, and all these super famous people have gone there, like maybe Goethe and people like that. I mean, but he was teaching there, and he, you know, was one of the main people who was writing a lot of the documents of Vatican II when it happened, along with John Paul II. So he knew how much it let that breath of fresh air into the church, which had gotten brittle in a lot of places. But what he saw when he got back among the students and saw how everybody was interpreting it was how far astray they went from what was intended. And so he started writing this book, and it still applies. And in fact, the one I'm reading has, is it three introductions or maybe just two? But he wrote a new introduction to it fairly recently saying, you know, I wrote this from this vantage point, but I believe that now it's still true. And as I'm reading it, it is. He's talking about the misunderstandings that the modern world has about the faith and Christ and Catholicism and what it means to be human. And oh my gosh, Scott, you would love it. It's just...
Writing it down. I'm going to definitely pick that up as soon as we're done.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking for a book of that type right now.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, it's a big book, like 300 or 400 pages, and almost all of it, it goes over the Apostles' Creed, and he starts off with the, is it I believe or we believe?
Yeah.
It changed during Vatican II, so he talks about both aspects of it. And then he talks about in God the Father, the Creator, the something, you know, the Almighty. Then a whole, like 100 pages on that.
Wow.
And then, and in Jesus Christ, his only begotten Son, the whole rest of the book almost is about that. And you would think it just sounds tedious when I say it like this, but it's just oh, it's so good. And my poor husband is so tired of me going, just listen to this. Just listen. You can't get the whole thing, but just one listen. Sentence. Yeah, exactly. This is, it's like, read it again. So, but it's that kind else. Of thing where he's, in fact, a bunch of us were talking about it this weekend from, you know, that Catholic New Media thing. And we were at dinner before we took some people to their airplanes and, or hotels or whatever. But it was funny because usually when I'm in a group of people and you start bringing up a pope, mm-hmm. Benedict especially, and I'll say, I love this pope. I think he's kind of like my pope. You know, what he writes, I get really easily, and say, I love John Paul II. You know, he had some flaws, but mm-hmm. you know, he was great, but I really relate to Benedict more. And almost always, at least 2/3 of the people go, oh no, John Paul, he was my man. And they just swoon over all his wonderful attributes, which of course he had. And this was the first time I was with 4 different people who could hear me at that part of the table. And they all went, oh yeah, me too, me too, me too,
yeah,
me too.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a great feeling, actually.
Yeah, that's neat. So, that's neat. You know, isn't it remarkable though? You know, when you look at this, I was just listening to, there's this guy I like to listen to. His name is Ravi Zacharias.
Oh, I love him.
I love him too.
You introduced me to him.
Yeah. And one of the things that he's always talking about is how he calls it the second level of philosophy, I believe. I'm sure it doesn't derive or come from him, but is arts, you know? And you watch a movie and you receive a message from that movie. You know, it's like what we talk about here all the time.
Yeah.
But yet the problem is in our society is that that's all that people are getting. You know, that there's no basis, right? They have no basis for this. They're watching this in a vacuum. They have they're standing on nothing and they're watching a movie and they come away with that, oh, you know, with ideas that don't really make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, when I was listening to him talk about this the last time, I've heard him talk about it several times, it occurred to me that isn't it remarkable that we've had John Paul II and then now Benedict XVI? Because John Paul II was an actor, and he was in the arts, right? And for him to understand the power of story in that way, and then to be able to be in that, what was he, 26 years? To be visible all the time, like, and to be, he was like the media pope. You know what I mean?
Oh,
He changed the church because he was constantly visible.
And constantly visible. He was, the thing that I think is so remarkable, well, he was so charismatic and he was really wonderful. And when I say Benedict's my pope, that just means I pick up his books and they speak to me more than, like, you know, I love John Paul also.
Yeah.
But
yeah, if I can finish this thought real quick.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because, no problem. Because the thing is to follow him with Pope Benedict XVI, who has like all the information, it's almost as if John Paul II sets up all the media and then Benedict is allowed to spread the message in his way. I just, you know, that just occurred to me this time because he's using what John Paul set up.
Well, that's what Pope Benedict said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not exactly that, but he said he thought he was made pope because he was to finish the work that his good friend John Paul did.
And when I was listening to him talk about this second level philosophy and how it permeates everybody, it's almost like an easy input into your head. You know, you watch a story or you read a story and there's something about that connects with you. And it's both marvelous and dangerous, right? But it's just, that just made me think, you know, wow, everything's connected. You know, it's almost like you can see something like a plan going on.
One more time. Yeah. I know. Well, they say, you know, and we didn't need the scientists to tell us, but wasn't it relatively recently where they said we're wired for stories?
Yeah.
We pay attention better. We learn better. We everything. And I'm thinking, and I think we've talked about this before, you know, Jesus taught in parables and, you know, all the stories in the Bible. And why wouldn't we learn something through stories?
Yeah.
They tell a truth in a way that truth can't.
Exactly right. And there was another thing that I originally found on SFF Audio. Jesse's mother had posted it, I believe.
Oh.
And it was an early TED Talk. The lady's name was Elif, E-L-I-F, and then Shafak, S-H-A-F-A-K.
Okay.
And it's a talk that's well worth watching. It's about 10 minutes is all. And she just describes the purpose of literature and what she sees as its purpose. And its purpose in a nutshell is for us to meet other people or for us to understand the other. She says, you know, if we can read a book and understand a Muslim, right, mm-hmm. and how that person thinks, that helps us both.
Yeah.
It helps us both, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, to me, and to get back to this book, that's exactly what the Queen finds.
Yes.
Is she is learning about people throughout the whole book by reading things that she wasn't able to experience. So now she's starting to understand people, and it changes her in this book too.
Mm-hmm. And, definitely.
You know, we've all read books that have changed us.
Yes. That's the power, that dangerous power of words, because she says, she's talking to Sir Kevin again, and he's talking about the books, and he says, I can understand Your Majesty's need to pass the time. Mm-hmm. Pass the time, said the Queen. Books are not about passing the time. They're about other lives, other worlds. Far from wanting to pass the time, Sir Kevin, one just wishes one had more of it. And then later she talks about books do not defer, and I loved this. All readers were equal. Mm. And this took her back to the beginning of her life. And that's when she talks about being anonymous. And I thought, that's the point this book makes, because at the beginning she reads a book and, oh, it's a hard book. She has really a difficult time, but she reads it. And then at the end of the book, she reads the book and has a different reaction altogether, because she's had so much more experience of different places and people, as you're saying, and different ways of expressing themselves. And
right.
It does change you.
Yeah, and here's another quote that says the same thing. I think of literature, she wrote, as a vast country to the far borders of which I am journeying but will never reach. And I have started too late. I will never catch up. So that's another way of saying I don't have enough time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's funny because then she starts writing.
Yeah, yeah. And that was interesting too. You know, as a writer, the author is writing stuff about her wanting to write. I just thought, you know, it kind of got into this circleist thing where she was saying that, well, if reading is good, then writing must be even more important. And she's talking herself into how important this is. And it was interesting that a writer would write that, you know, because it's got that humorous tinge to the whole thing.
Yeah.
So he's like poking fun at himself, I think, at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, yeah, because she starts just by writing her own original thoughts down, her observations as she reads different books.
Right, yeah.
And then she realizes as she's doing that, she's like, well, everybody who writes these books, they have a voice. They say something. Mm-hmm. I don't have a voice. And her husband, who doesn't get it, it's like, oh, probably too much, you know, what, caught a cold or something? I can't remember what he says. He's always kind of vague. But
he always is, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's, I want to read you another one that I loved.
Please.
Not sure how this ties into what we're talking about at this exact moment, but there was a sadness to her reading too, and for the first time in her life, she felt there was a good deal she had missed. She had been reading one of the several lives of Sylvia Plath and was actually quite happy to have missed most of that. But reading the memoirs of Lauren Bacall, she could not help feeling that Ms. Bacall had had a much better bite at the carrot and, slightly to her surprise, found herself envying her for it. Mm-hmm. I love that. That was great.
And that juxtaposition of Sylvia Plath and Lauren Bacall, who most people go, oh, Sylvia Plath, so important. Lauren Bacall, okay.
Yeah.
It's really hilarious. Yeah, so she's an independent thinker because she hasn't had anybody prejudice her yet either.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
But yeah, this book makes me smile.
It's such a charming little sweet book. And on Goodreads, somebody said, oh, I smile every time I think of that book
when
I was reading it. And I said, oh, yes, and rereading it was just the same fun. And the person said, I never thought of rereading it. And I was like, oh, well, I don't get to reread many books unless I bring them up for here.
That's funny.
I have the Queen's problem. I feel like It's not like I feel like I'm behind, but my goodness, I have so many pages of books to read. And they're all that I've sampled the beginning of through Kindle.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, see, I think the Kindle actually lowered my stress level because seeing books upon books upon books upon books on a shelf that I haven't read.
Oh, yeah.
Because at one point in my life, I had way more than I have now. Right now, I just keep my absolute favorites, but I used to just keep everything. And I would buy way faster than I could read. You know, I'd find sales where you get, you know, 10 for $1 each or whatever, you know, and I'd say, oh boy, you know, and I'd fill this stuff up. And then it just became this like a huge weight. I'd look at that and think that exact same thing. Oh my gosh, am I ever in my entire life going to finish those? But in a Kindle, at least they're all just hidden.
So the Kindle's helped you become detached.
I guess maybe so in a way. But now there's not this big towering thing. Now I just read what I want to read, and it works just fine.
I used to get rid of my pages of to read, but you know they all just grow back. So I'm like, I'm not getting rid of them anymore.
Yeah, and it's neat to see. You know, one of the things that I really wish that I had, and I've been encouraging my daughter to do this, is just a list of everything that I'd ever read. To have I bought her a nice notebook and I said, just every time you read something, just write the book in there and put a little sentence about what it was about or something. Cause I said, and you'll love that, you know, when you're 40.
And Goodreads. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Goodreads does the same thing, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. When I'm going through and people say, you didn't write a review down. And I'm like, because I came across a list of 15 books that I'd read and I remembered what I thought of them. And I just kind of marked them. They weren't right now. They were from some time. Yeah. But
hope that Goodreads lasts forever.
Oh, no. Don't even say that. Of course it must.
Yes, it must.
Well, you know, in my, you know, I've had quote journals for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love those.
And maybe I've mentioned this to you, I can't remember now, but they've kind of turned into quote journals/journals/ note places. For instance, so in my quote journals, I'll have quotes, of course, but each weekend I'll write down, what movies have I watched that week? What am I reading then? And if I finish something, I either number it or I'll grade it like A, B, C, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'll write other things down, like when Roger Ebert reviewed the movie that Rose edited, which I, you know, probably haven't said here enough. Gave it 3.5 stars.
Yep.
Didn't mention pacing, so that means the editing was okay. Said the proud mother. So I'll write notes like that, or like it's flipping open right now to all my notes about The Stand. So when I've been looking for quotes in other quote journals where I've done that, it's that time capsule thing you're talking about. I'll go, oh, look, this is when I was reading those books. Oh, yeah, I might like to reread this one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the exact thing you're saying.
But it's the same. It's the same reason. It's exactly the same.
Yeah. It's just a fun, you know, flipping through of everything.
Yeah, and that's neat. That's just cool.
Do you run across people who don't understand why you read as the queen seems to?
Yeah, I certainly do.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. lots of people. You know, at my previous job, clearly, you know, I was there for 16 years, so I knew everybody there really well. So, you know, there wasn't a lot, you know, most of the people I worked with had been there the whole time I was there. So, there were several people there who just, you know, I was an odd one there.
Isn't that funny? Because they never read. Isn't that sad?
It is. It's remarkable. I don't know how they get by. But I mean, I used to think, you know, it's terribly arrogant of me to think that, you know, I must be smarter than them or something like that. And I did used to think that. I don't think that anymore at all. You know, this is when I was a lot younger. I thought that, but they're just doing different things, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're, you know, sitting there watching TV, you know, that they're going fishing, they're going hunting, they're, you know, these particular people, I mean, they've got full lives. And I think, you know, I realized that, and, there was one time I was in a meeting and, one of the older guys said, I don't have any idea how this wasn't directed at me in any way, but I have no idea why it even came up. But he said, I can't imagine why anyone would want to read a novel. What a complete waste of time. And this was right before a meeting that we were having. And I'm sitting there and so, yeah, I have met a lot of people.
Did everyone look at you and go,
No. No, I mean, they had no idea at that time. This was a while back. You know, I wasn't podcasting or doing anything. Yeah, it had to have been before the year 2000.
Well, I always read a lot more books than anyone I knew. Now, thank you, Internet. I realize I am a piker compared to some people. Like Kurt Jester puts me to shame, as well as Jenny Colvin.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
But, and then I read fast, and then I read a lot of books that people wouldn't really read. They'd say, well, why aren't you reading this, you know, popular New York Times bestseller book? You're reading some weird, science fiction. Mystery.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something that's happened to me. You know, I just keep taking over your conversation, but
no, please.
Every time over at least the last 10 years, I have to say every time that I have tried to join the popular bandwagon, what everybody's talking about right now, it has been an utter failure, especially in science fiction.
Oh yeah.
I mean, cause I'm reading this stuff that's coming out and I'm just like, what the... You know, it's passed me by. It sure has. I mean,
Well, you know, yes, this is bad of me. And it's not that I'm smarter. It's just I don't care about the stuff that a lot of, when it says bestseller list, that means it appeals to a huge portion of the population. Well, I don't have a lot in common with some of those people. I mean, I have never really watched American Idol, okay? It's so popular.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things like that I just don't get, or I kind of look at it and go, oh, I see why you like it. I just don't care. Please.
Yeah.
You know, give me a hot foot instead, something. I'd rather do that than be forced to watch American Idol.
Right. Right.
And so I just kind of look at that as that's the book equivalent. And I'm just feel like, that's the lucky thing about having so much variety.
Yeah. And that
we can all have something we like. I can watch The Amazing Race and they can watch The Bachelor.
There you go. You know? You bet. And I am, I am not an elitist in any way. I mean, I love Stephen King.
You know,
he's pretty popular. So it's not that I don't have any connection at all. It's just that I think that there's just something about older books. You know, and I say older than 10 years, you know, if they're still around, there might be something to that, but they just seem to me more thoughtful. Books nowadays, especially in science fiction and fantasy, the newest ones seem to be about stuff happening. Meaning, let's turn up the volume on these characters as much as we possibly can and drag these people through as many terrible things as possible in as short a time possible, and people will love it, and people are loving it. You know, it's almost like, you know, Joss Whedon started it in a way, because and the reason I say that is because Joss Whedon, of course, is a master, you know.
Yes.
But yet he is meaningful, and also I just feel like everybody's trying to copy him. And by everybody, I mean like everybody.
Yeah.
You know, we need a snarky talking character. We need one of these. We need one of those. And, you know, I still don't think Joss Whedon is formulaic in any way, but I think that the people that are trying to copy him are.
Well, you know, it kind of, to me, this kind of goes back to a conversation that we had just right before we started the recording, which was, we were talking about the fact that this author has written plays. And I said, I don't really read plays. And you said, yes, plays are to be watched. And I said, except for Shakespeare. And then we started talking, of course, about, where's the Joss Whedon connection here? And so is it Much Ado About Nothing that he's doing?
Yeah. It
got shown at the Toronto Film Festival. And it has, you know, the score of people that we've loved to see in his other works. And you said you had an interesting story about him in Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. I said that I saw a DVD extra, I believe. And I cannot remember the actor's name who plays Spike. And I apologize. No. Oh, James Marsters.
That's
James Marsters. I'm fairly sure that it was him I saw on the thing. on the DVD extra talking about going to Joss Whedon's house and reading Shakespeare for fun.
Yeah.
So how fun would that be?
Go figure.
Yeah.
But there's a guy who loves story mm-hmm. in all its classic forms. And how many of the people who are the imitators, they're just grabbing onto the stuff they can see. And it's kind of what you were saying about the heart of something.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that foundation. And so Joss Whedon understands, on whatever way he looks at it or thinks about it, he understands story
mm-hmm.
at its base. And story is what we care about.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's kind of like when we were talking last time about the Coen brothers and Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had some conversations in email with somebody who's a film critic, who's a friend of mine, who mm-hmm. was saying that the problem with Tarantino and the Coen brothers is they tend to just mash up the things they like and throw them out there. And he said, if you've watched, especially Tarantino, lots of old movies and lots of old TV and listened to lots of old music, it can be very derivative. Mm-hmm. Except that Tarantino somehow manages, I think, I don't know, since I don't watch much of him, to elevate it to a different level, which is kind of what Joss Whedon does, too.
Right, right.
But Tarantino tends to, I think, mash it more directly. I don't know. That mm-hmm. was the feeling I got, and I could be, you know, wrong. Mm-hmm. So.
No, I think you're right.
But but of course, he's very passionate about it,
mm-hmm.
Tarantino. And yeah. I think Joss Whedon, too.
Yeah, no question. Yep. No, yeah, without question.
Yeah, Rose was saying, when I was telling her about this, she said that if Tarantino did TV, he would do Community. His movies are like the Community of movies.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which made me have a fondness for them.
Yeah, then. Yeah. So. I have high hopes for the Community. They gave us three glorious seasons, so I should just be happy. Yeah. But everybody's like, you know, what's going to happen now?
mm-hmm. With the creator as executive creative
right.
advice or whatever he's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they say
he had any role at all. At least he has a role, huh?
Yeah, I don't know how much that is, but they say he was rather troublesome sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess we'll find out
how imagine. Brilliant. It takes an unruly man to get progress or whatever that quote is.
Right. Yeah, sometimes you've got to be unruly to get it right.
Yeah, and exactly.
Networks might not like that, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Well, and that's, again, takes us back to the queen.
Yeah.
No quietly clue. Determined
mm-hmm.
get her own way, even though she was doing all the things she was supposed to do.
Yeah, and she's subtle. The whole book is subtle, but she's so subtle in how she's, you know, getting this stuff to happen, you know, and then starting to write and giving herself time to read. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. She said at the very, toward the end, page 99, it says, the novel she had once found slow now seemed refreshingly brisk, dry still, but astringently so, with Dame Ivy's no-nonsense tone reassuringly close to her own. And it occurred to her, as next day she wrote it down, that reading was, among other things, a muscle, and one that she had seemingly developed. And that made me think of, you know, of course, the more you read, the better you get at it. And the other, depending on what you're reading, I guess. And then also, a lot of times you realize what you're thinking through writing it down.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to write stuff down out of books too, you know, especially mm-hmm. when preparing for this podcast. It's yes. changed how I read for the better, mm-hmm. for the better. And, you know, whenever I read now, you know, with the Kindle, I have my notebook next to me.
Yes.
I still do make my highlights, you know, in the Kindle, which is how I was reading them. And man, that's handy. But, you know, they go in my notebook too.
Yeah. Well, because the notebook is the thing. I don't know. There's something. I like notebooks though.
Yeah. Me too.
Sometimes
you need to draw a circle.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right.
Yep.
You can't just highlight.
In computers, it's just too hard to draw a circle.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you liked this.
I really did. I thought it was neat.
Yeah.
Not something I would have read, which is probably why I liked it. You know, I read it and I was like, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not something I would have looked at and said, hey, I should read that.
Yeah, and I'm sure I found it through someone on Goodreads, which is...
Mm-hmm.
why I like it so much, because I follow the reviews of all these people who read so many books I would never read, but their reviews are entertaining.
Yeah. And we're both on Goodreads, folks. Yeah. We should mention that. I'll put links to both our Goodreads on this show notes. We ought to do that. We ought to have that as a permalink anyway somewhere.
Yeah, and in fact, I'll mention something here that I mentioned it to a couple of people over the last few days, Dom Bettinelli being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So excited to meet him. But he was saying, how do you do these reviews all the time? You're always on Goodreads. And I said, well, I use the updates when you're saying, oh, now I'm on page 300.
Yeah.
And it's got a little box where you can put notes. And sometimes I'll just write things like I'm writing to everybody going, I knew those soot flakes were going to be trouble. They're ominous, I tell you. But sometimes what I'm doing is making little notes for that also are going to be for myself. So when I'm going back to do a final review, I can just look at all my updates.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just gather them up and put them in order and go, well, these three things do matter.
Oh, cool.
It reminds me of what I've thought as I was going through.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I hover my hands over the keyboard on that little note thing and I'm like, should I say that? I don't know if I should say that. But I should like just say that. It. Okay.
Whatever it is.
Whatever it is, let her rip.
I try to do it without spoilers, which kind of makes it more entertaining in a way. That's why I was saying, I told you it was part horror novel. The Soot Flakes. Ominous.
I love it.
And it means nothing to anyone who hasn't read it, but I find I'm entertaining myself. What the heck? Who cares?
Oh, I love it. Well, I really want to hear about the Catholic New Media Conference. Should we just tell everybody what's coming up next and then go into that? Because I'd really like to spend some time talking about that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Mary
the
and
next,
Max?
Yeah, the next one is Mary and Max. That's right. Okay. And I found that streaming on Netflix for those of you who have that.
I know.
So that's how I'm going to watch it.
I forgot. I was excited to hear that because I'm going to check Amazon Prime. I still haven't done it because I not time to watch it yet. But cool.
And the podcast after that is October.
Ooh,
and though I have not yet picked a movie for October, I've still got to do that. But I have picked the book. We mentioned it earlier. What I'm going to do is something a little bit different. We have done it in the past, but I really want to talk about H.P. Lovecraft. But H.P. Lovecraft has not written any novels. All short stories. So if you haven't read Lovecraft, we picked four stories that will be a really good introduction to him. And all of them together probably won't even add up to a whole novel, I don't think.
Oh, yeah.
But what we're going to do is The Dunwich Horror,
mm-hmm.
and then Dagon, D-A-G-O-N,
yeah.
and then The Statement of Randolph Carter.
That's a good one.
And then The Color Out of Space. And with those four, we should have plenty of Lovecraftian themes to talk about. And one of the cool things about reading Lovecraft, and we mentioned that earlier too, is that so many writers refer to him in the science fiction, fantasy, horror genres.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a source text for a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's fun to read.
And if you listen to many podcasts, there are quite a few podcasts that either read his stories or talk about his stories. Or lately I've run into several people who've referred to an essay that he wrote, and so they're reading stories from that. I mean, H.P. Lovecraft is still hugely enjoyed and influential.
I think he's more influential now than he was when he was alive.
I really do.
Yeah. He was a very poor man. Poor in monetarily.
Yes. He was rich in imagination, as you will find out.
No question, we're not sure what happened to him, but fascinating stories. Yeah. Eager to talk about him.
And then we don't know the next movie, which is
I haven't
fine.
Picked the next
I like
movie
to
yet.
Be surprised. Yeah. But then reading ahead for anybody who's who's struggling with big books like I seem to be doing at the moment, Bleak House.
And I saw, Kurt Jester's already started it, and you've got it started. So I threw it on Goodreads, saying I better get her started, but I haven't started it yet.
I'm about halfway through, and I think the Kurt Jester might have finished it.
Oh, that man, I believe
it.
Reads
like a demon.
It's unbelievable.
So fast.
Yeah.
But he gave it 4 stars, and he doesn't usually rate anything till he's done, whereas I'll tend to go, I'm pretty well into it. I'm going to give it a rating. I may change it at the end, but
gotcha.
I like to.
Yeah.
Do that. So.
So yeah. So I'm going to be reading some Lovecraft for the next couple of weeks, probably, mm-hmm. and then I will jump into Bleak House.
Oh, and the good thing on Lovecraft, if you do have a Kindle, it's generally you can get a lot of those stories free from Project Gutenberg. Well, even if you don't have a Kindle, you can get the PDFs free or HTML where you can just drop it into a document. Or I mean, you know, there's a I say HTML, but that's not right. But they've got five or six formats. And one of those is something where you can just go read it online or print it out, you know, so you can get these stories free. And I think LibriVox probably also has, if you go there and search, if you want audio, I'm sure they have at least one version of all these stories or most of these stories.
And they do. They do. I found The Color Out of Space there. But I have a preferred narrator for H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
And his name is Wayne June. Anybody who's been over to SFF Audio has heard some Wayne June reading H.P. Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll be listening
Jesse's
to some of that.
Also been reading H.P. Lovecraft stories.
A lot of Lovecraft over there.
I've been enjoying them, and they've been providing the stories and everything. So,
yeah, great.
But don't go there before you read for us.
Yeah, that's right.
Not that I'm in competition.
You bet. All right, and with that, so how was the Catholic New Media Conference?
It was amazing, everybody. It was amazing. Well, we went, they had one 3 years ago in San Antonio, and Tom went, and at the time I did not realize that was only the second one that had ever been done, and it's put on, or I guess you could say hosted, although this isn't a group that has any kind of dues or anything, by a group called SQPN.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember what that stands for, but it's a network of Catholic podcasters.
A lot of really great podcasts on
there. Oh, yeah. Very good Catholic podcasts. And they were begun by Father Roderick, can't say his last name.
Yeah.
It's Dutch.
You know, I have such a fond memory of him. We talked about Pope John Paul II earlier.
I know.
I listened to him when Pope John Paul passed away. And all throughout that, he was doing a podcast called Catholic Insider, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think he must still do that one. But
he still updates that sometimes.
Does he? Okay, because I got to go look and see. Oh, I love that one. I love that one so much. And he does these sound seeing tours that are...
It really
showed me the power of audio.
Yeah.
To listen to a sound seeing tour and have it be as rich as, if he was carrying a video camera. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I liked it. Anyway,
I
digress again.
He's kind of like the Joss Whedon of podcasts, in a sense, because he kind of goes off on all these tangents every so often, because for a while he was, when Battlestar Galactica was out, he was watching it, and he had a show called Catholic Breakfast. He may still have it, but I didn't see it when I was looking recently.
That's right.
And I would listen to that sometimes because, he was doing it every day. I couldn't listen every
day.
There's
no way I could keep up with that either.
Yeah, but he did,
Daily Breakfast,
so he'd go Battlestar Galactica, or he'd do a series on Harry Potter. I mean, he loves pop culture. He's our people. And he speaks wonderful English. He's very into American pop culture. And he's the one, I believe, who came up with the idea of, well, let's have this little network. And then he started saying, well, you know what? Let's do a get together in America for where we can all talk to each other and see each other. And so the one I went to in San Antonio was the second one, and I didn't realize it. And, they were just getting started. It was fine. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something that I probably would have really gone back to if it stayed the way it was. But then they kept improving. I mean, when I said there wasn't much about bloggers, I got like three emails from different people going, we've heard you. We're changing it. And I knew, because I knew somebody who went and spoke the next year at one, they did change it. I mean, they're very responsive. They care.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the fifth one, and it was amazing. They had 3 days. I didn't get to go to the tech day, but I went Wednesday, which is when they had, they had somebody talking about Catholics on YouTube. And they did a lot of comparison. Here's the top YouTube channel, most popular. Here's the top 10 Catholic ones. Let's look at a few samples. Let's talk about what should we do? What should we think about if you want to get into this kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And it was there. Then there was a brand, and I can't remember that guy's name, but it was Spirit Juice. Studios, I believe, and which made me want to go look at YouTube, and I never have time for that.
Yeah.
But it was really good. And then there was, you know, Brandon Vaught did a thing about, let's look at some of these different faiths who want to help spread the word and look at what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Let's look at what Catholics are doing. And so it was a really interesting comparison again. And, you know, the Elizabeth Scalia, the anchoress, was the keynote speaker for that day. Okay. Neat. I've emailed with her forever. I got to meet her.
That's great.
And I say that as if I got to meet the queen, but she's not like that. My husband never raves about anybody. And he was like, wow, she's great. She's so real. Fantastic. She's so genuine.
Oh, that's great.
And what it really comes down to is, you know, like you've talked about going to science fiction cons, and I never really got that before, but this kind of did that for me. I was meeting people who, I've read your blog forever. I listened to your podcast. And they were, people were meeting me saying that. There were people there who were completely new. I mean, this one man, I fell in love with him. He was an older guy. He was dressed in his dress trousers and his long sleeves work shirt every day. And he was taking these notes on this pad. And he was very earnestly asking questions like, well, what time of day do you blog? You know, are you as funny on your blog as you are here? So, you know, I talked to him later and he said, oh, well, I'm from Lafayette, Louisiana, and our youth group doesn't have anything like this. And so I just want to help out. And I'm like, I fell in love with the man who
that's great.
Came for 3 days to stay in Dallas and is just working as hard as he can to try and figure it out. You know.
Yeah.
And then I have to tell you about this one guy who was another one of those guys who you didn't see him talking to many people. But you look back and he has this tousled curly hair and he's wearing this t-shirt and it's got like a skull on it and a Bible on it and a shovel on it and a rake on it. And it's called, I can't even say this, but it's called Ora et Labora et Zombies, a novel in epistles by Ryan Charles Trussell.
Huh.
And what he's got is a zombie novel that's also got this kind of Catholic point of view because it's being told by a Catholic and it's told in letters.
Huh.
He sends out a letter a week.
Uh-huh.
And the main concept is that basically in New Orleans, Mardi Gras seemed a little odd. You know, they got stories of people trying to, you know, attack the parades and break up the parades. And they thought, oh, terrorists or troublemakers. Well, Lent starts the next day and all of a sudden it's, you know, bad news. People are getting sick. People are dying. No one can get out of town. So this husband takes his son and he goes to this Benedictine Abbey that's about 45-minute drive away because that's where he and his wife used to go on retreats and they agreed that that's where they'd meet if trouble came from this thing.
Hmm.
Well, his wife hasn't shown up. So he's writing her these letters. He can't mail them, but he's writing his thoughts and what's happening and the story. So it's going to be told in 72 letters that you get in the mail.
No way. Oh, how
seriously,
cool is that?
Right? Isn't
how
this
do I
great?
Sign up for that?
I know. Well, I will give you the link.
Okay, please do.
And
that's,
I wrote
that's
down
cool.
about it.
Yep.
And I love the what is it, juxtaposition of somebody who's coming to the new media conference to get out the word about his love of handwritten letters.
Oh,
you
that
know?
Is so neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? That's just like whatever's new catches people's eyes, you know? But it's really not the word new. It's different.
Novel or...
Yeah.
Different. And I read this for... He gave me a first letter as a sample.
Oh, cool.
And I loved it. And somebody just wrote me an email right before I got on with you. And they said, well, you know, I added up how much these 72 letters are going to cost. And that's only for the country club set. And I said, well, you're right. It's kind of expensive. But it made me think of Bram Stoker's All Written in That Style.
Uh-huh.
And I asked my husband, should we do this? And he said, we've always wanted to support the arts. We can't afford it. This seems expensive, but it's the supporting we can do. And we met the guy. We liked him. We would like to see this work.
Yeah.
So we now feel we're patrons of a zombie apocalyptic letter-written novel. And I'm trying to, in a good patronly way, tell people how much I like it.
Oh, that's
I feel like
neat.
I'm buying a Warhol or something.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really
great.
So
does he send them to you one at a time?
Yeah.
They just show up one? I mean, you sign up and you say, okay, start me this week. And
yeah.
He'll
well,
start.
I guess.
Oh, wow.
How that cool. I don't know. You'll have to ask him.
Okay.
But he's selling them. He's trying to work at a subscription thing right now. You buy them in bundles on PayPal.
Uh-huh.
But what happens is that as the letters come out, like I've bought through letter 18 or whatever that, I guess that's what he has available. And he's on letter 4 now. So he'll send me the next two through four.
Uh-huh.
And then each week I'll get the new letter.
Oh, that's neat.
As they come out. Yeah. So you get the anticipation of going. It's like in Charles Dickens in Bleak House, you know, in the book I've got, they mark, here's the end of what came out in this month. Uh-huh. You know, the 20 episodes that came out. So I kind of read it in episodes if I can. I mark the beginning and the end, and then I stop and I go, ooh, how would I have felt if I had another month to go before I found out anything else? You know? So yeah, this is that for real.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah.
I am going to sign up too, because that is really cool.
Yeah. So, you know, those kind of people, I would never have met him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so many other people. Really great people that I gave a talk on the last day, which was International Bloggers Day.
Mm-hmm.
I had submitted a proposal. They liked my topic. So I gave a talk and it went very well. But at the very beginning, I made this little off the cuff comment about something and someone actually said, amen. I had to just register it in the back of my mind because I was then on and doing my talk and I was like, okay, I had to think. I asked Tom today, did someone say amen? And he goes, they did. It was great. So, you know, you don't get those moments if you're not face to face.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You get to meet those. So next year, who knows where it'll be. My dream would be that you and I could go.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some other people. Will Duquette from A View from the Foothills came.
That's cool. Yeah.
And, he's read stuff from my blog and, you know, I like his book reviews and stuff. And he's at Happy Catholic Bookshelf.
Uh-huh.
So where I do some book reviews and things for Pathos. But you know, it's just fun to meet those people.
Yeah, sure is. That would be really cool. That would be great.
Well, it's like you and I have said, there's that synergy that comes even from talking things out aloud.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's different. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah, so.
Yeah, maybe we can podcast live.
Wouldn't that be
fun? Did anybody do that?
Actually, yeah. What is it? Greg and, I can't remember his wife's name. Willits.
Uh-huh.
They do, it started off as Rosary Army, and I think it's called a Catholic.
I have heard of Rosary Army.
If I'm getting this wrong, you guys and people hear it, I'm really sorry. I'm bad at this. But, yeah, they actually had a booth on the, because it was held with the Catholic Marketing Network.
Uh-huh.
They had a booth there, and they did live radio interviews the entire time.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, I'd be talking to someone, they're like, oh, I got to go talk to the Willits now. Yeah, that's great. Somebody said, oh, I heard this because I was walking by and Father Roderick was giving them his interview. I'm like, yeah, because you were just walking by on the floor.
Oh, wow. How neat.
Yeah. So it was, and I wouldn't have gone if it hadn't been in Dallas, and I'm so glad that it was because it kind of made me see how far they've come.
Mm-hmm.
It was really well done.
Oh, that's
really
great. Well done. That's great.
And I'm finally coming down from my high from the whole overload of all these people experience.
Wow.
So
well, that's neat. That's neat. Well, I went ahead and I purchased the virtual ticket and I am waiting for my content. So I'm excited to hear. I looked at the list of talks and you can't wait.
Yeah, this is the first year they've done the virtual ticket, Father Roderick said he heard it somewhere and went, why aren't we doing that? Which is, they already, you know, just tape everything.
Yeah, it's such a great way to get a little bit more money for the cause, you know, and
yeah,
exactly. You know, I was happy to put that up and going to be happy to hear all that.
Yeah, and then the content's out there. Yeah, because if you were at the show, you could get it for $25.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat.
So, and I hope a lot of people were signing up. They said sales were going well on that. And I'm glad because I don't think there's anything like it in the country. You know, they have bishops meetings and they have media meetings, but they don't have, you know, regular people out there kind of meetings like that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, good for Father Roderick too. This has really come a long way from Insider podcast he had.
Yeah. Well, that's what I told him. I was like, I know you didn't specifically have this vision, but thank you. Great job, you know.
Yeah.
Really. Because I know it's a lot of work.
Yeah, no question.
But I had a great time.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend it.
Excellent. And I'm going to sure do my best to be there next time.
Well, you had special circumstances.
I did. We're dropping our son off at college and a little too much at once, but, but yep. Well, that's going great, by the way.
Oh, good.
He's doing well.
Yeah. You said he loves it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does he call home ever? Or yes. Do you have to just beg him for, okay.
He talks to mom a couple times a week. Well, no, I'd say every other day, actually.
Oh, yeah, okay. So. It's early days.
That's right. And I get an occasional text.
That's good. Oh, and I just want to give a shout out to Heather Ordover, who,
ooh, yeah,
you know, she's been on here. Her son's having surgery in L.A., and it went really well from what I saw on her knitting blog.
Great.
So that's good. But she is, you want to know what kind of a nice, genuine person she is? I said, you know, I know you have no time when you're there. If Rose can help you, since she's there, like driving or something, let us know. And she said, and then I had said, Rose is thinking of changing her emphasis slightly. And I told her, and she said, I'm trying my hardest to actually meet Rose while I'm there. And I'm like, what? Because give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, but I know several people I need to connect her with. And I talked to Rose, who's moving last weekend. So Rose was having her own set of stresses.
Mm-hmm.
But Rose said, do you know, Heather, actually, while she was there on Friday, I guess while her son was having surgery, she emailed several people and connected them to Rose. And one of them wrote right back, the one who's most closely aligned in what Rose is interested in. And they've got breakfast tomorrow set up.
Wow.
Or tour Wednesday, I guess.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Good, and I'm just them. Like, you know, how nice of her to take the time to think about that and do that. Well,
yeah.
She's got all that personal stuff going on. That's above and beyond.
It sure is. Wow. You know,
she's such a nice person.
She sure is. Yeah. I look forward to talking to her again.
Yeah. Everybody go listen to The Wrath of Khan again. And then sometime when she's done, we'll talk.
That's right. That's right.
And she's supposed to be in Dallas for a big Catholic Knitting Guild day of classes, and I get to see her then.
This is something I had no idea existed. The Catholic Knitting Guild has a conference?
No, not Catholic. I'm sorry. Dallas Knitting Guild.
Okay.
Gotcha. It's one of these things I'm connected with. The city of the faith. Oh, I don't know.
That's great. That's fantastic.
No, it's the Dallas Knitting Guild. And Tom's like, where's she appearing? And I'm like, oh, she said.
Okay, I can send a recorder, can just you guys, when you get together, just record yourselves, would you?
Yeah.
Just whatever happens.
Yeah. I thought of that. Uh-huh. I thought we should, if she comes to, I was going to have her over for dinner. I was like, we should sit here and record something. I don't know what we should record.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
something,
that'd be fun.
Or talk about something.
Yeah, no
I'll
question.
Ask her.
All right.
I'll ask her. We'll see. Yeah.
Sounds good.
You know, Tom's like, a 600-person tea, they're having that. And I'm like, okay, this Knitters Guild, too big for me.
Oh, man. How funny. That's great.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, good deal. Well, that's wonderful. That's all great.
Yeah. She's a very nice person.
Yep, absolutely right. Well, okay, I guess we're probably out of stuff this week, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure I had bored Betty Silly with that last bit of stuff, but it had to be said.
That's great. And thank you very much. I'm looking forward to that next time. The whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, thanks for doing this, Scott. I really liked it.
Me too. I have a great time. So.
Yeah, me too.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see everybody next time for
Mary
and Max. That's it.
Yeah.
I was going to say Max and Ruby, but I knew that was wrong.
It was so close. Two names, short.
Max and Ruby is something else. I don't know what, but it is something.
It's one of those mashup things. I think Quentin Tarantino's making it.
Probably is. All right.
Oh, well. Okay everybody. Thank you for listening.
You bet. Thank you, and have a great couple of weeks.
Have a great couple of weeks. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.